So you can easily obtain everything that you need on a vegan diet. However, some planning and mindfulness are necessary to optimize your diet and get all of your micronutrients that your body needs to thrive. My name is Leigh Farnason. My brother Anders and I are on a mission to help 1 million vegans get into the best shape of their lives. We firmly believe that the more healthy and fit vegans there are in the world, the faster veganism will spread. Let's work together to inspire change, spread compassion, and challenge the status quo. Welcome to the Vegan Gym Podcast. Welcome back to the Vegan Gym Podcast. I am your host, Leif, and I'm joined by my co-host, Dr. Daphne Bascom. And today we have a super valuable conversation. We're going to be teaching you how to avoid nutritional deficiencies as a vegan. Now, most of these nutritional deficiency concerns are not unique to vegans. In general, meat eaters actually face more nutritional deficiencies than people who are following a more whole food plant-based diet. But since this is a vegan health and fitness podcast, we're going to be talking about how to specifically avoid nutritional deficiencies as a vegan. So, ready to jump in?
Let's go.
Let's do it. So you can easily obtain everything that you need on a vegan diet. However, some planning and mindfulness are necessary to optimize your diet and get all of your micronutrients that your body needs to thrive. And in this episode, we're going to be going over the most important nutrients, including vitamin B12, vitamin D, calcium, omega-3s, iron, iodine, and selenium. Now, for each of these nutrients, we're going to be covering exactly what you should be doing to prevent nutrient deficiencies and feel your absolute best. But before we dive in, it's important to note that you should always listen to your body. Nutrient deficiencies often show specific signs, so pay attention to any symptoms indicating something that might not be right. And I totally understand the temptation of trying to diagnose yourself after perusing WebMD. I'm sure that's something you've also experienced a lot. Not necessarily personally, but you've seen a lot of people do that. But the best way to ensure that you are staying healthy and avoiding nutrient deficiencies is to get regular blood work done. So actually, before we dive in, do you have any kind of specific recommendations for how people track this over time?
So Leif, that's a great question. First thing I want to say is that we are not your healthcare team. So the frequency with which you get monitored is partly dependent, one, on your health insurance, if you have it, because there are certain health plans that have recommendations with regard to preventative healthcare screenings. Many of them are usually annually. So at minimum, you should know your numbers, which I think is very important, at least on an annual basis. If you have health conditions that warrant you having more frequent monitoring, if you have type 2 diabetes, if you have high cholesterol, if you're on any medications, or if you've obtained a test result and the result was abnormal, then you may need to have that monitored on a different frequency schedule, whether it's repeat it in 3 months, 4 months, 6 months, but make sure you follow up to ensure that whatever intervention you're taking has the intended result.
Yeah, great feedback. And that's something that I actually recently did, and we'll be talking about that on another episode. But let's now dive into specific nutrients and figure out exactly what you should be doing to prevent deficiencies. And the first nutrient that we're going to be discussing is vitamin B12, arguably the most important one that vegans should be conscious of. So the function of vitamin B12 is needed to form red blood cells and DNA. It's also a key player in the formation and development of brain and nerve cells. Vitamin B12 is produced by bacteria, contrary to popular belief, or at least the belief of carnivores who think that it comes from meat. That is not true. Yes, meat does have vitamin B12 in it, but that's not because it came from the animals. It comes from bacteria. So some sources of vitamin B12, let's talk about where we can get B12. In earlier human history, we would get B12 from plants grown in B12-rich soil. We'd drink unfiltered water, which would have B12 in it. We'd also kill and eat free-grazing animals who ate plants, and those plants and the soil that was on those plants is how they got B12. But in today's world, soil quality has deteriorated due to climate change, the use of pesticides, farming practices, And we also drink very clean, sterilized water. And most animals are no longer free range and free grazing. In fact, livestock feed is often supplemented with vitamin B12, which is then transferred to the consumer. So most people who consume animal products are actually getting vitamin B12 that was supplemented to animals that they are then consuming. And that is not the best form of vitamin B12. So there are better ways that you can supplement with B12. I'd rather supplement directly with a very high quality source of vitamin B12 than get it through some kind of crappy product that was given to an animal that I am consuming. So since we're not eating animals, we need to get B12 from other sources. So let's talk about vitamin B12 supplementation. You should either, one, supplement by vitamin B12 in just a supplement form, or two, you should consume 3 servings of B12 fortified foods daily. Let's talk about supplementation. So there are 2 forms of vitamin B12. There's cyanocobalamin and methylcobalamin. And although some research shows that methylcobalamin may be more easily absorbed by the body, cyanocobalamin is much more shelf stable. So in other words, methylcobalamin forms of B12 can be degraded in the bottle before you even have a chance to take them. So that's why it's best to choose cyanocobalamin forms when you can. And the dosage that you're aiming for is 50 micrograms daily or 2000 micrograms weekly. That's what it looks like for supplementation of B12. And the other way that you can get B12 into your diet is through fortified foods, which again is kind of a form of proxy supplementation. But fortified foods that contain B12 are fortified nutritional yeasts, fortified breakfast cereals, fortified plant-based milks, and even some grains that are fortified. So all you need to do to figure out whether something is fortified or not is you check the label. If the number is above 0% for vitamin B12, then it's fortified. And generally speaking, the higher the percentage, the better, especially if you're relying on fortified foods to hit your B12 intake. All right, the next nutrient we'll discuss is vitamin D. So let's talk about the function of vitamin D. Vitamin D is a crucial nutrient that plays a huge role in bone health, immune health, and also plays a big role in reducing inflammation in your body. Now, what's unique about vitamin D is that it's the only nutrient that our bodies can make on their own just by getting sun exposure. So that's why it's called the sunshine vitamin. However, many factors affect the amount of sunshine required to get your daily dose of vitamin D. So your skin tone plays a big role. The time of year plays a big role. Where you live, like your proximity to the equator, also plays a big role, and your use of sunscreen plays a role as well. So all of these factors affect the amount of sunshine you need. In other words, kind of affect the amount of vitamin D that you can get from the sun. And generally speaking, especially kind of in warmer months, or if you live in an area where you don't get lots of sun exposure, or yeah, it's just cold outside and you're not walking outside in shorts and a t-shirt, then you can easily hit your vitamin D intake by taking a vitamin D supplement. So we'll talk about that in just a second, but to get the vitamin D that you need from the sun, try to spend 5 to 25 minutes in the sun 2 to 3 times per week. You need your arms, face, neck, and legs ideally exposed to be able to have kind of as much surface area on your body to absorb sunshine and produce vitamin D. Preferably, you're getting out during midday when the sun is at a high point in the sky. And if you are wearing a high SPF sunscreen, you may need to extend those times as well for the total amount of sun exposure that you're getting. And also keep track of time. Too much sun can be harmful to your skin. So it's not always a matter of more is better. So in general, I do wear sunscreen when I'm spending time outside, and I think that's important, but just be sure that you're kind of keeping all these factors in mind when you are working to hit your kind of certain sunshine exposure to get adequate amounts of vitamin D. So as far as supplementing with vitamin D in your diet, there are 2 kind of general ways of doing this. One, you can eat fortified food sources of vitamin D, and then you can also supplement with an actual vitamin D supplement. So as far as fortified food sources go, we have plant-based milks, we have some orange juices, we have breakfast cereals. Simply check the nutrition label to identify these fortified options. However, you must be mindful of the type of vitamin D used, particularly in orange juice. So be on the lookout for vitamin D3 fortified orange juice, which is often derived from animal-based sources. So to make sure that you're staying vegan friendly with your vitamin D sources, check the ingredients for vitamin D2 instead, or you can choose an orange juice that is specifically labeled as vegan. As far as supplementation goes, even though you can get vitamin D through sun exposure and some fortified foods, you should still possibly consider taking a supplement, especially during the colder months when you spend more time indoors and the sun is not as intense. So there are two forms of vitamin D, ergocalciferol, which is vitamin D2, and cholecalciferol, which is vitamin D3. Now there is some evidence that D3 is more efficient at raising blood levels of vitamin D. So this is the type that we ideally want to look for, but we need to look for a vegan version of vitamin D3. And most vitamin D3 that you find on the shelf is derived from animal sources. The vegan version of vitamin D3 is typically made from lichen, which is a type of fungus and algae. And the dose that you're looking for is 25 to 50 micrograms or 1,000 to 2,000 IUs daily. And this range is a bit higher than the recommended intake from the National Institute of Health. And that's because we don't just want to avoid vitamin D deficiency, but we actually want to aim for optimal serum vitamin D levels in our blood. And a growing body of scientific evidence suggests that higher serum D levels are associated with a longer lifespan and reduced risk of many chronic diseases such as cancer, rheumatoid arthritis, irritable bowel syndrome, and type 2 diabetes. And people who are overweight, obese, or over the age of 65 need a higher dosage as well. So you can aim for closer to 75 to 100 micrograms daily or 3,000 to 4,000 IUs per day.
And two quick follow-ups before we move on to the next nutrient. Remember, vitamin D is fat soluble, so you don't want to triple or quadruple the doses that we're recommending here. And secondly, if you have had your vitamin D level assessed, you should talk with your healthcare provider because you may need a slightly higher dose than even the levels that we're recommending here.
Yeah, really important point on the fact that it's fat soluble. So just, yeah, making sure that you're including some kind of dietary fat in your diet is important to ensure that you're getting D as well as other fat soluble vitamins. All right, the next nutrient we'll discuss is calcium. Now, the function of calcium is that it's an essential mineral for bone health and the proper functioning of the heart, blood vessels, muscles, and nervous system. And the recommended daily allowance for men and women who are 19 to 50 years old is 1,000 milligrams per day. For men who are 51 to 70, it's also 1,000 milligrams per day. And women who are 51 to 70, it's 1,200 milligrams per day. And then men and women who are 70 plus, it is 1,200 milligrams per day. So those are some general kind of recommended daily allowances for calcium. Now let's talk about the best sources of calcium. If you're a vegan, you're probably already eating tofu, some kind of soy products, plant-based dairy. These all contain calcium and are often fortified with extra calcium. And this is where we can get the bulk of our calcium from for the day. And here's what you should look out for. So tofu, simply check the nutrition label, aim for at least 130 milligrams or 10% of the daily value per serving. And this may not seem like a lot, but most people are consuming more than one serving of tofu in a meal. I typically have about three servings at a time, which equates to around 270 calories and almost 400 milligrams of calcium in my single Leif serving. Another way that you can get calcium in your diet is by using a plant-based yogurt. Also aim for at least 130 milligrams or 10% of the daily value per serving, and then plant-based milks as well. These tend to have a bit more calcium, so you can aim for one with at least 260 milligrams or 20% of the daily value per serving. Generally speaking, the more the better. You should work to hit the calcium targets that we established a few minutes ago based on who you are. And some other kind of food sources of calcium would be dark leafy greens and some cruciferous veggies. This includes broccoli, Brussels sprouts, kale, collard greens, bok choy, okra, mustard greens, and cabbage. Most of these contain around 40 milligrams of calcium per half cup serving. So adding 2 cups to a salad will give you around 160 milligrams of calcium. So you should aim for at least 2 servings of leafy greens and 1 serving of cruciferous veggies daily, not just for calcium, but just for the general nutrient boost that you're going to get from those foods. And please note that spinach has some calcium, but it is bound by oxalates, making it less bioavailable. Oxalates are water soluble, so cooking spinach by steaming or boiling can reduce oxalate content and improve the amount of calcium that you're absorbing. Another great food source of calcium is chia seed. Chia seeds have about 55 milligrams of calcium per 1 tablespoon. You can easily add 1 tablespoon or 2 to your morning oats or your smoothies, and they're also a really great source of omega-3s. Legumes like white beans, navy beans, and kidney beans have 50 to 100 milligrams of calcium per half cup. Fortified orange juice can have 350 milligrams of calcium per 1 cup serving. Again, just check the label. Sesame seeds have about 88 milligrams of calcium per 1 tablespoon, and you can use this as a topping for so many different savory dishes. Ground up sesame seeds, otherwise known as tahini, is also a really great base for dressing. You can find it in pretty much all forms of hummus, and it has 60 milligrams of calcium per 1 tablespoon. Almonds and almond butter are another really great source of calcium. 20 almonds have about 65 milligrams of calcium. So if you always choose peanut butter, which is admittedly very delicious, try switching it up every once in a while and using almonds or almond butter instead. And there are many other plants that contain some level of calcium that can help to contribute to your overall calcium intake for the day, such as chickpeas, kiwi, flax seeds, Brazil nuts, cocoa powder, cauliflower, canned tomatoes, and more. All right, the next nutrient we'll discuss is omega-3. Omega-3s are the only nutrient we will cover in this podcast that isn't a vitamin or mineral. They are specifically polyunsaturated fatty acids, and their function is really important. So omega-3s are super important for your brain, eye, and heart health. So there are 3 different types of omega-3s that our bodies need. We've got ALA, DHA, and EPA. For ALA, plant-based sources include chia seed, flaxseed, hemp seeds, and walnuts. And then for DHA and EPA, the sources are fish, seafood, and algae. And fish and seafood, just in general, actually gets all of their EPA and DHA from algae. And as vegans, we don't consume fish or seafood, and we can do the same thing that fish do. We can have algae oil supplements that are a great alternative to fish oil pills. We can go directly to the source, just like we're doing with all of these nutrients, and not using a middleman or middle fish or whatever you want to call it to get our nutrients. So the good news is that if we consume enough ALA, our bodies can convert a portion of it to DHA and EPA. Now, the recommended daily allowance of ALA as per the National Institute of Health is 1.6 grams per day for men and 1.1 grams per day for women. And that's why including at least 1 serving of ALA-rich food in your daily diet is important. So for women, you can have 1 tablespoon of ground flax or chia seeds or 2 tablespoons of hemp seeds or about 9 walnut halves. And for men, 2 tablespoons of ground flax or chia seeds, about 3 tablespoons of hemp seeds or about 14 walnut halves to hit your ALA intake for the day. These recommendations exceed 1.6 grams of ALA per day for women and 2.6 grams per day for men. And incorporating these foods into your meals is super easy. You can just sprinkle them onto your morning oats. You can add them to salads. You can toss them into a smoothie, whatever you want. And I've actually been eating walnuts every day for the past 2 months or so since I spoke with Dr. Greger for our podcast. And that's because he highly recommends them. They're one of the main foods that he incorporates into his longevity kind of nutrition protocol. And that's something that I have been eating as well. And actually, I've never been a huge fan of walnuts, but they're kind of growing on me. If you get the organic ones, I find that they taste a little bit different.
Less bitter?
Yeah, less, exactly. Less bitter. And I actually, I like them a lot more. So anyways, that's a little tip. If you don't love walnuts, maybe try some organic ones. And for some even more delicious options of how to incorporate these into your foods, you can make a chia seed pudding. You can have some energy bites. You can make homemade granola bars that have walnuts or anything else in them. And there are just so many ways to get tons of plant-based ALA into your diet. As far as supplementing with omega-3 fatty acids goes, the reason we might want to do this is that conversion rates of ALA to DHA and EPA can differ significantly from person to person and are generally pretty low. So according to some research, in healthy young men, approximately 8% of ALA can be converted to EPA and 0 to 4% of ALA can be converted to DHA. That is obviously a very low conversion rate, and in healthy young women, the conversion rates are slightly higher, which is thought to be a result from higher estrogen levels. Women can convert approximately 21% of ALA to EPA and 9% of ALA to DHA. And although these conversion rates are higher than men's, they are still quite low. So while these numbers might be enough for survival, while it might be okay to get all of your omega-3s from ALA, and as long as you're consuming adequate amounts, everything might work out and that might be fine for you. But in general, nutrition authorities recommend an additional 250 milligrams a day of preformed EPA and DHA. And the word preformed simply means that it comes in the actual form of EPA and DHA, not the converted form from ALA. And the way that you can supplement EPA and DHA in your diet is by taking an algae oil supplement. And as we touched on, fish are actually really high in omega-3s because of the omega-3 rich algae that they consume. So by consuming algae oil instead of fish oil, you essentially skip the middleman and you go straight to the source. And thankfully, algae-based supplements don't contain all the toxic contaminants that fish oil supplements typically do. So there's no need to worry about supplementing with omega-3 fatty acids from algae oil. It's worth mentioning that there's evidence to suggest that higher doses, around 800 to 1200 milligrams per day of a DHA EPA supplement, might be even more protective against major adverse cardiovascular events, according to a 2022 meta-analysis of 14 randomized controlled trials. So you can also opt for a higher dose of an omega-3 supplement, or you can double up the serving size of a lower dose supplement as well. This is something that you can always discuss with your doctor. Lastly, when checking the label, ensure that there is no flaxseed oil or other oils that have been added. Some brands may add these to boost their omega-3 content as a lower cost option. However, they provide omega-3s as ALA, not DHA and EPA. The next nutrient we'll discuss is iron. So let's talk about the function of iron. Iron is a component of hemoglobin, a protein in red blood cells that transports oxygen from the lungs to the rest of the body. Iron is what binds the oxygen molecules to allow hemoglobin to carry it throughout the body. Iron is also essential for the enzymes involved in DNA synthesis, energy metabolism, and immune function. As far as the recommended daily allowance for iron, men should aim to get 8 milligrams per day, and women who are 18 to 50 years young should aim to get 18 milligrams per day. Premenopausal women need more iron than other groups of people to account for menstrual blood loss. And then women who are 50 plus, who are postmenopause, should aim to consume 8 milligrams per day of iron. So let's talk about some good iron sources. We've got green leafy vegetables. So spinach cooked has 6.4 milligrams of iron per one cup, and other leafy greens have about 1 to 3 milligrams per cup. Legumes are another great source. White beans and lentils are some of the highest iron sources with 3 to 4 milligrams per half cup. Chickpeas, peas, and kidney beans have 1 to 2 milligrams per half cup. And then also tofu and tempeh have about 2 to 3.5 milligrams per half cup serving. And another really great source of iron is chia seed. Chia seeds have 3.3 milligrams per 2 tablespoons. And then whole grains can also be a really great source. Quinoa and rolled oats have 1.4 to 2.3 milligrams per half cup serving. And whole wheat or whole grain bread contains around 3.5 milligrams per 2 slices. Fortified foods can also be really great sources of iron. So breakfast cereals containing oats, wheat, or rice are commonly fortified with iron. Plant-based milks are also commonly fortified with iron, so is nutritional yeast. So you can check to see if iron is on the nutrition label, and if it is, there's a good chance that it's been fortified. Tons of other plant-based foods like cashews, sweet potatoes, dried figs, tahini, and other foods can really add up to hit your daily iron needs for the day. And let's talk about some ways to increase your iron absorption with iron enhancers. So vitamin C can really help to boost your iron absorption by up to 4 times. Bell peppers, tomatoes, broccoli, strawberries. You can even add some lemons or limes to your weekly shopping list. And if you just add a little bit of a squeeze of lemon or limes to your meals, you can add some flavor and also a good vitamin C boost. You can also drink lemon water alongside a meal. And just having some kind of vitamin C rich fruit right after your meal is a great way to boost your iron absorption as well. Another great way to boost your iron absorption is by including alliums into your diet. So garlic and onions are a great example. You can add these to your meals for some added flavor and also a really great iron boost. And now let's talk about some things that we want to avoid that inhibit your iron absorption. Specifically, we're going to talk about tannins and polyphenols. Having tea or coffee during your meals can actually decrease the amount of iron that your body absorbs. You don't have to just totally give them up. You just need to avoid drinking them right alongside your meals. So try having them about an hour before or after a meal to ensure optimal iron absorption. The next nutrient we'll discuss is iodine. Let's talk about the function of iodine in your body. Iodine is a crucial mineral for maintaining thyroid health. Iodine is an essential component of thyroid hormones, which regulates the body's metabolism. This is why iodine deficiency can lead to a decrease in thyroid hormone production, resulting in hypothyroidism and other associated health issues. The recommended dietary allowance of iodine for men and women who are 14 and older is 150 micrograms per day. Now let's talk about some sources of iodine. Most iodine on the earth comes from the ocean, making oceanic plants the richest sources of this nutrient. So seaweeds like nori, wakame, and dulse are really great sources of iodine. Since we need iodine in such a small quantity, just a small serving of really any sea vegetable will typically do the trick. For example, just 1 teaspoon of dulse meets your iodine needs for the day. And some ways that you can incorporate seaweeds into your diet include eating plant-based sushi, having some dried nori sheets as a snack, sprinkling some seaweed flakes into your soups, your tofu scrambles, or your other dishes. And not everyone may enjoy the taste of seaweed. It does have a very particular and strong flavor. So be sure you test it out before you add it to a huge batch of some meal that you're making. And if you don't want to eat that regularly, then another common source of iodine is iodized salt. So 1/2 teaspoon of iodized salt meets your daily iodine needs. And you can spread that throughout the day by sprinkling a pinch on your meals. And it's worth noting that excessive sodium intake can be harmful and contribute to high blood pressure, but we do need some sodium in our diet because it's an electrolyte that helps us to maintain fluid balance and supports nerve functions and facilitates muscle contractions as well. The recommended daily sodium intake is 2,300 milligrams or less, and 1/2 teaspoon of iodized salt contains only about 1,150 milligrams. So you can definitely fit that into your diet to help meet your iodine intake needs. And you can really think of sea vegetables or iodized salt as iodine supplements that also can help to flavor your food. But if sea vegetables and iodized salt aren't your thing, then you might consider supplementing to ensure that you're meeting your iodine needs. The next supplement we'll discuss is selenium. And as far as the function of selenium goes, a component of selenoproteins, which are proteins that contain selenium as part of their amino acid structure, are involved in reproduction, thyroid metabolism, and DNA synthesis. Selenoproteins can also enhance the capacity of antioxidants that can protect us from oxidative damage and infection. As far as the recommended daily allowance of selenium, men and women need 55 micrograms per day. And some really great sources of selenium include Brazil nuts, which is the most concentrated source of plant-based selenium. 1 Brazil nut contains about 90 micrograms of selenium, so you can think of this as your daily selenium supplement. Whole wheat bread, pasta, flour, oats, chia seeds, and more also contain selenium. And you really don't need that much selenium, so getting enough from food is not difficult at all if you're eating a varied diet that includes some of these options on a regular basis. The next nutrient we'll discuss is zinc. Zinc is required for the activity of hundreds of enzymes that play a critical role in immune function, protein synthesis, DNA synthesis, and wound healing. So the recommended daily allowance of zinc for men is 11 milligrams per day, and for women is 8 milligrams. And some sources of zinc include nuts like cashews, pecans, and peanuts that have 0.8 to 1.7 milligrams per ounce. Seeds like pumpkin seeds, flax seeds, and hemp seeds that have around 1 to 2 milligrams per 2 tablespoons. Whole grains like quinoa and oats that have around 1 milligram per half cup. Legumes like chickpeas, lentils, and kidney beans have 0.5 to 1.5 milligrams per half cup. And breakfast cereals are often fortified with zinc as well. The next nutrient we'll discuss is magnesium. Magnesium plays a role in muscle and nerve function, energy production, and bone health. And the recommended daily allowances for magnesium for men who are 19 to 30 years old would be 400 milligrams. For women 19 to 30 would be 310 milligrams. And then for men who are 31 to 70 plus would be 420 milligrams. And women who are 31 to 70 plus would be 320 milligrams. Some really great sources of magnesium include nuts and seeds like pumpkin seeds, chia seeds, almonds, and cashews, which have 60 to 150 milligrams per 1 ounce serving. Whole grains, especially brown rice and quinoa. Brown rice contains 85 milligrams per cooked cup, and quinoa contains 120 milligrams per cooked cup. Leafy greens are also a really great source of magnesium, especially spinach and Swiss chard, which have 80 to 150 milligrams per cooked cup. And that's another reason that we want to add at least 2 servings of leafy greens to our diets every day. Legumes like edamame, kidney beans, lentils, and black beans contain about 35 to 50 milligrams per half cup serving as well. So overall, the main takeaway from this episode is that it's great to aim for plant diversity in your diet. Eating a diverse range of plants means that you're going to get a diverse range of different nutrients. So you really don't need to overcomplicate things. Just avoid eating the same few foods all day, every day. For instance, if you had broccoli with your lunch, try having some different vegetables with dinner, like carrots and green peas. And if you're always snacking on cashews or any other nut, try switching it up and opting for almonds and walnuts every once in a while as well. So in conclusion, you may have noticed a few recurring food groups that we mentioned throughout this episode. There aren't really any plant foods that contain only one single nutrient. So for example, hemp seeds may be best known for their omega-3 content, but they are also really great sources of magnesium, zinc, iron, and more. So the key here to hitting all of your nutrient targets is to eat a balance of all of these food groups so they can all work together to help you to meet your daily nutrient needs. So let's recap those different food groups. Dark leafy greens for calcium, iron, and magnesium. Cruciferous veggies like broccoli and cabbage for calcium and iron. Fortified vegan dairy options for calcium, vitamin B12, iron, and vitamin D. Tofu and tempeh for calcium and iron. Legumes for iron, calcium, zinc, and magnesium. Whole grains for iron, zinc, magnesium, and selenium, or you could just have a Brazil nut for selenium as well. Chia seeds, hemp seeds, ground flax seeds, or walnuts for omega-3s. Nuts and seeds are also really great sources of selenium, magnesium, and zinc. And then sea vegetables or iodized salt for iodine. And consider supplementing with vitamin D, vitamin B12, and preformed omega-3s, EPA, and DHA. So I hope that you found this episode to be super valuable. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll catch you on the next episode. To get access to some of our best content for free, head over to theVeganGym.com. We've got tons of articles and guides to help you burn stubborn body fat, build lean muscle, and supercharge your health. You can even use our vegan nutrition calculator for free to figure out how much protein, calories, and micronutrients your body needs. Get started right now at theVeganGym.com.